Okay. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Akinori Maemura, the chair of the APNIC Executive Council, and chairing this session. And this is the APNIC fee structure session, which is for the discussion about the APNIC fee structure. And we, maybe many of you know that the mainly in the NIL community, we have been discussing about the fee structure region, and we are now we are still discussing, and this is the EC and the Secretariat's idea to have the open discussion, to have some of the possible scenarios, and to have the input from your membership, regardless NIR or ordinary members. So we have three presentations here for this session. The first, Toshi Hosaka from JPNIC will give us the update of the NIR fee discussion, and then the Paul Wilson from APNIC will present us the secretarial proposal, but this is not meaning that the proposal for some approval to go ahead, but not, I don't mean that, but it's just a scenario, possible scenario, possible new fee structure, and then for the discussion here and asking you for some input. Now also the JPNIC has maybe a long time ago. Several months ago, circulated our JPNIC's own fee schedule, proposed fee schedule, and Toshi Hosaka again will present about that. Okay, so I am asking Toshi for the presentation, for the update. Before that, this is just a housekeeping notice. Presenters, please use the microphone because it is broadcasted, but still that is in program.
It's still the network's down. Yeah.
Yeah. So okay.
The audio cast will start again as soon as the network comes
on. All right. It hopefully recovers. Okay, tea and lunch for the break in it is provided to the foyer of the level 2. And before the beginning, I noticed that about the APNIC social event, which is held this evening, and it require the ticket for that. So people who receive the ticket, please bring your ticket for the to ride on the bus. And if you don't receive the ticket, please go up to the help desk. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And APNIC staff will collect your ticket as you board the bus. The bus will leave from level 1 plaza deck. The last bus will leave at 7:10. Please do not miss it. And also, my APNIC and the Policy Flash demo all day at the APNIC help desk. So please enjoy. And the help desk is also available at the break times. And as usual, APNIC offers the fantastic on-site notice board. So you can cross out everything about this meeting on the on-site notice board, OMB. Okay. Please start your presentation, Toshi.
Thank you, Maemura-san. My name is Toshi from JPNIC. Hello, everyone. At first, I plan to make this presentation in the NIL SIG, but this is the APNIC fee structure session, so I will move. I moved my presentation from NIL SIG to this session. By this presentation, I will briefly update our discussion so far. As you can see the title, we have been focusing on the NIL fee discussion so far, but we have a long history for this discussion. For those who are not familiar with the this discussion, I will briefly explain the history and the update. In September 2004, APNIC 18, initial proposal was presented by JPNIC. This is the proposal to set price cap to NIL per address fee. Per address fee is only charged to NILs, and the other normal APNIC members is not charged the per address fee. So the background the background of this proposal is very huge amount of per address fee was charged to NILs when NILs allocate the huge IPv6 or IPv4 allocation to the NIL members. So JPNIC proposed to have some price cap or ceiling to NIL per address fee. But consensus not reached this time. And taking this opportunity, NIL fee working group to discuss the future NIL fee was established. And APNIC 19, this is held in February 2005, 1 year ago. Draft proposal waiving IPv6 per address fee for NIL was presented. That was not a proposal, but the informational presentation to have a feedback from audience. And that conclusion was to continue discussion about this issue. And after APNIC 19, APNIC EC had a meeting to discuss NIL fees, especially about the per address fee to NILs. And they decided to apply 90% discount on NIL IPv6 per address fee. This occurred in April 2005. And last APNIC meeting, APNIC 20, in September 2005, a formal proposal to abolish IPv6 per address fee was presented. And consensus reached at SIG, NIL SIG and AMM, APNIC member meeting, but not in the mailing list. Consensus not reached in the mailing list during foreign comment period. So, since then, we are seeking for alternative NIL fee scheme. In APNIC 20, Paul presented some discussion stuff about NIL fee, and JPNIC presented some alternative NIL fee discussion stuff in January 2006, and I will present that later. So that's all for now.
If you have any questions and comments, okay, thank you very much. It's good to see the history of this discussion. And Paul will present his secretariat discussion stuff for the revision of the membership fee, and it is already circulated among the APNIC EC. I know it is contains not only NIL fee structure adjustment and also some other aspect of the revenue securing
like that.
Yeah, sure. Afternoon. Thanks for being here. I've put together this presentation to address the issues of the APNIC fee structure more widely than just with respect to the NIR fees, as Akinori said. And this the motivation comes from many different discussions about APNIC fees, about in the context of the NIR meetings and elsewhere, where it's been suggested that part of the problem that we have with NIR fees is actually a systemic sort of problem that goes across the broader APNIC fee structure, and there are certain aspects of the fee structure that we may want to change more comprehensively. And by doing so, we can also address the NIR fee issues and problems at the same time. So this is really to step back and take a look at the overall fee structure. There's something in here that may look like a proposal. What it is what I've referred to in the paper as a candidate or an example fee structure, and it shows how we would go about assessing that candidate, that example fee structure, in terms of its impact on members and its impact on APNIC. But please don't see this as a particular proposal as I go through it, even though you might sort of see it as something that I'm trying to push forward. I'm not. I'm putting it forward as a very concrete example that we can all discuss. And towards the end of this presentation, I've got a number of questions which come back to aspects of that that fee structure, and the sort of questions that we'll need to look at in discussing this and arriving at any sort of meaningful conclusion about it. So what I'm going to be looking at is the background for the discussions, in a sense, for why we're here and what needs to be looked at with the fee structure. It's useful to look at the principles on which we would form an APNIC fee structure rather than launching straight into some possible fee structure. It's very useful to look at exactly what we're trying to achieve. Then I'll be looking at this particular example in detail with some discussion of the impact that fee structure would have if it were selected by the and approved by the community, by the membership community, and then implementation, and hopefully there'll be some interesting discussion about it. The fees that APNIC collects are intended to cover the costs of running APNIC. And I think it's useful to bear that in mind and have a look at what the APNIC finances look like these days and what they've looked like over history. For quite a number of years, APNIC was pretty healthy from 1998 through the dot-com boom, and actually beyond the time of the dot-com crash. As you would know from the IP address allocation curves, we've continued to allocate IP addresses very actively and continued very actively to run the RIR. But for a while there, during that boom time, as you see from 1999 to 2002, the revenue was substantially above expenses. Now that was very useful to create that surplus in every year, because at the EC level, there's an accounting principle that the APNIC Secretariat needs to observe, which is that we need, for the stability of the organisation, to maintain a one-year surplus, one-year capital reserve in the bank. So in order that if something dramatically changes down the track, we have one-year operating costs in the bank, and we are able to give ourselves some time through a period of what could be conceivably large financial losses to readjust APNIC to whatever new circumstances might be around. And the sorts of things that I guess were being anticipated then were the sort of major change that might have come from the WSIS process if there was some major overhauling somehow of the way IP addresses were being managed, if there was some major economic or industry circumstance that changed APNIC's fundamental viability, then there would be time for APNIC to continue to operate and to adjust, and not to just crash and be wiped out quickly under such circumstances. So what I'm saying is that for a few years there, APNIC was growing quite rapidly, and because of rapid growth, the annual operating expenses are increasing, which means that capital reserve had to be built. And so those surpluses that we made contributed to the capital reserve, which is being maintained at least 1 year of operating expenses. However, in the last few years, we've continued growing and growing quite rapidly, but the way the numbers work out, we have very much more balanced budgets. So we've got just a small surplus in years 2003, 2004. 2005 looks a little bit healthier. We actually had a budget last year, which you'll see in Friday's meeting, if you're there at the members' meeting on Friday. We had a budget that was going to be line ball, and we only managed to make a better surplus through non-cash items, that is through the unrealised foreign exchange rate gains and losses. So we were lucky in that case that we had we made, $300,000 extra because of the fluctuations in the exchange rate. Now, otherwise, 2005 would have looked very much like 2004, almost even. The budget for this year has got a small loss budgeted, and this is just, again, a phenomenon of the growth of APNIC, the way the numbers are working out with the revenues and the expenses. So this is where we are at the moment. We're running balanced budgets that might look very responsible and very, very useful. I think it's always good to live within your means, and we're demonstrating that. However, there are some concerns about what might be coming in future. And also there are some opportunities for APNIC to be improving services and providing services that members in the community are asking for and which we may not be able to afford to do at the moment. So in that vein, I'd just like to to highlight some of the activities in recent years that we have been able to deploy even in this period of balanced budgets, and I'd just like to give you some indication of where these increased APNIC budgets are being spent, not in terms of numbers, but just the types of different services that APNIC is being asked to deploy and that we're deploying over and above the standard allocation services. So these are all things that have been implemented just in recent years through these years of balanced budgets. We've had. Since 1999, we've had ICANN meetings and some very substantial fees that have had to be contributed to ICANN that we didn't have to contribute before. There's been very substantial travel expenses and other associated expenses with ICANN. We've deployed the MyAPNIC platform and continued to develop that as the major delivery platform for services to the APNIC membership and community. We've undertaken the root server project, which so far has deployed 19 servers throughout the Asia-Pacific region. We've done quite a lot of quite significant research and development that's of direct operational interest and relevance to the community, particularly Jeff Houston's work on the AS numbers, the 4-byte AS numbers, which are going to be an operational necessity in a few years. This activity of resource certification, which we've heard a bit about in the sessions today, to do with securing the routing system by issuing resources for IP address allocations and so on. A lot of work on tracking and projecting and producing statistics and reports on where internet resources are being consumed and so on. There's increasing demand for training course content. E-learning is something that we've been asked to deploy many times, and that's coming about this year. We've improved the APNIC meetings by way of participation mechanisms that are available, so the meetings have real-time transcription, webcast, audiocast, podcast, and numerous improvements to the meetings. Information and outreach are pretty important, and we've been spending quite a lot of effort on what we believe are necessary information activities, and that's particularly important in the context of the last item here, which is the latest sort of overhead on APNIC operations, which is the World Summit on Information Society, the fact that we've had many, many meetings to attend over the last 4 years, a great deal of work to do in presenting material, in liaising, in attending meetings, in networking, and so on and so forth. There's many new political demands on APNIC that didn't exist back in, say, 1999. So these are just examples of the sorts of, to illustrate how the demands of APNIC and the scope and scale of activities have increased over this time. And it's fairly relevant because, as I say, we're operating on a very balanced budgetary situation. We've been able to deploy a lot of new services without raising fees. And in fact, the fees haven't been raised in any way since the fee structure was introduced back in 1996. So when we introduced that fee structure, we just had three tiers. We had small, medium, large memberships paying $2,500, $5,000 and $10,000 per annum. Those fees have stayed exactly the same ever since 1996. So we've had 10 years of static membership fees. And we've had a few adjustments to that system since then. We've added a few new tiers. The tier selection has become mandatory. Early on, still almost 10 years ago, we had the NIR per address fee introduced to replace the system that was there. The point here is, I guess, that there's been a lot of inflation in the time since this fee structure was introduced, and there's been no inflation of the annual fees that APNIC members have paid in that time. We've also seen, quite importantly, a big devaluation in the US dollar during that time. So that is something that affects anyone who's spending US dollars is quite happy about that. And APNIC fees being charged in US dollars have deflated in local currency terms for anyone who's paying those fees in US dollars. On the other hand, the APNIC Secretariat has actually suffered somewhat from that, in that as the US dollar devalues, the majority of expenses at APNIC are spent in local currency as well. So we're at the other side of that that coin at the APNIC Secretariat, in that we're suffering the lower value of the US dollar. We're also very subject to the fluctuations of the US exchange rate, which we've been able to use to our advantage, mostly by good luck over the last few years, such as last year's operating surplus. But it still stands that over the last several years we've had a devaluation which has resulted in, overall, since the beginnings of this fee structure, which has resulted in lower income in local currency terms for the Secretariat. I'd like to just mention the NIR fees here as well, because that's something that's almost more or less precipitated this discussion. One change that has happened is that previously with NIRs, the address space from APNIC was allocated to the NIR to form an NIR address pool. Today, APNIC is allocating via the NIR to the members of NIRs, and so these days we're able to track the number of NIR members and the address holdings of NIR members. That's quite important in the fee structure example that I'm going to give. The problems with the NIR fee structure are fairly well known. The fee structure doesn't relate at all to the, in terms of the ISPs, to the fee structure for normal APNIC members. We have this per address fee that the NIR pays for allocations to themselves or to their members, and rather than having a fee structure that's based on the address holdings of the ISPs, the fee structure is based on the total address holdings of the NIR, which gives a very large, a very significant sort of economy of scale, which I'll explain. The current membership fee structure looks like this. As I said, we started with three categories. We've got seven now. So they go from the very small membership at $1,250 up to the extra large at $40,000. If you're receiving a minimum allocation of IPv4 or IPv6 address space, however, you'll sit in the small category, which is $2,500 from the start. The lower categories are provided to take into account people with historical address space holdings that are of a smaller than the minimum allocation, things like critical infrastructure assignments and that sort of thing. A little bit more on the NIR fees. The per address fee is something that is quite inconsistent with this current membership fee. The membership fee is assessed annually on the basis of the total address holdings of the ISP. So you'll sit in one of these seven tiers depending on how many addresses you have. When your membership renewal comes about, APNIC will calculate the amount of address space you hold at that time and will establish your membership tier accordingly. And that's how the annual membership for a regular APNIC member is determined. For NIRs, however, there's this thing called the per address fee, which is a once-only fee that's charged for an allocation to an NIR or to a member of an NIR. And it's only charged once. It's 2 cents per address for an extra large, all the way up to 15 cents per address for a small. But almost all of the NIRs sit in the extra large category, so this is where the 2 cents per address fee comes from. And if you do your sums and work out what this would cost for, say, a slash 10 of IPv4 or a slash 20 of IPv6, then the numbers are quite large. And this, for the NIRs, is resulting in a very inconsistent level of cost. So the charges are only incurred where an allocation needs to be made and not otherwise. For APNIC, it means that our income from the source is very unpredictable. So we have no idea from year to year whether the NIRs are going to be making one or two or 20 substantial allocations or not. So we have no reliability of that particular income stream. There's no fees charged according to the individual NIR members. So it doesn't really matter how many members an NIR has. It's all based on the number of addresses. And that, again, is quite inconsistent with the way APNIC members are charged for address space. It's really almost impossible to compare the lot or the financial situation of a ISP that is a direct member of APNIC with an ISP that might be a member of an NIR. That raises some issues of fairness and of comparability of the situation of those two types of ISP. Okay, so let's look at the rationale for what a new fee structure would look like, and in some sense as a rationale for why we might need a new fee structure, because our current structure doesn't really satisfy all the reasonable criteria for how it should work. We want to maintain overall revenues for APNIC in order to continue providing the needed services that APNIC provides. Revenues should be predictable. That is something I've already mentioned. There's a substantial unpredictability with the NIR per address fee structure. There's also an issue now that we have the facility for new NIRs to be formed. There is the possibility of new NIRs being formed almost any time. And that results in an even greater sort of degree of unpredictability, in that we could have, as we've seen in a couple of cases, large numbers of current APNIC members moving across to NIRs, becoming part of that NIR fee structure. Now, that, of course, is a feature of the NIR system. It's not a bug. We APNIC itself and the NIRs cooperate closely to make sure that ISPs have the best choice of where they go. But unfortunately, the effect of a successful NIR would be a very sudden and rather unpredictable change in APNIC's revenue, which obviously is not good for either APNIC itself or for any of the NIRs. Now, I've mentioned the fact that APNIC fees have stayed quite stable. One of the rationales that I'm introducing and would like to highlight in this fee structure is that there is a case for a revenue adjustment overall in the way APNIC revenues are calculated and received to take into account the effects of inflation and the foreign exchange effects that I mentioned before. So I use the word plan here, but the example fee structure that I will be showing you is designed to produce an increase in revenue of it's under 15%, but it is designed to produce an increase in revenue. That itself, the degree of increase, is something that, of course, is up to the APNIC membership to assess and to agree to and to decide. The one of the fundamentals that we have within the structure that is difficult to change, and I'm not sure that anyone would want to change it, and that is to calculate annual fees on the basis of address holdings. So we used to have at APNIC an optional membership category system where anyone who joined APNIC could decide whether they were small or medium or large. And that was quite good for a while the APNIC community was quite small. But these days, and in particular during the Asian economic crisis during 96, 97, 98, that structure, that optional structure, no longer reflected capacity to pay or the size of the organisation. So, what we did at that time was to set the tier, the membership tier, mandatorily based on the IP address holdings. And the theory is that the IP address holdings that a company has are somewhat related. They have to be somewhat related to the size of that company and to its capacity to pull its weight or to help to fund APNIC. So I'm not proposing, and I don't think anyone so far has proposed that aspect of the fee structure change. It's sort of a fundamental. Okay, there's an issue of small versus large members, and this is something that has come up from time to time as well, because if you look at the way the current fee structure works, we have bands of IP address holdings. If you hold up to a slash 19, then you will be a small member paying $2,500. If you hold up to a slash 16, you'll be a medium member paying $5,000, and so on and so forth. So for 3 bits of additional address space, that is a factor of 8 in your IP address holdings, you get a doubling of your membership fee. The effect of that overall is that, as you see in the table here, an ISP that has a slash 20 is assessed as a small member. They pay an effective cost per address per year of 61 cents US per address. An ISP with a slash 8 is a very large member, but their per address cost is 0.002 or 0.2 cents per year. So there is a very large economy of scale, if you like, or a very large advantage to the largest ISPs that has been raised in the past as an issue of fairness within the structure. There's another fairness issue. I've touched on this already, which is how do we actually assess the relative costs and benefits of APNIC membership for regular members versus those who are members of NIRs. So both organisations are standard ISPs receiving effectively the same service within the APNIC region, that is the IP address service. But it's very difficult to say that an ISP in Korea, for instance, has the same fairness, the same reasonable deal or arrangement as an ISP in India, say, where there is no NIR. So the consistency of the fee structure that's offered to members of NIRs and members of APNIC is another issue of fairness and consistency. It has been suggested that NIR fees, therefore, or the fees charged to NIR members, should be based on the regular APNIC membership fee structure. And that actually addresses the issue I've just mentioned, which is that really if you have an ISP that is an NIR member or an ISP that's independent of an NIR, they should be at least in a comparable situation in terms of the fees that they pay and the relationship finally with the RIR. And also an issue that's come up that's somewhat related is that NIRs at the moment have got very small, relatively small voting rights within APNIC. So a member of an NIR has very little vote in APNIC because the NIR itself as a member of APNIC has a maximum of 64 votes, which is exactly the same amount as any single large ISP. And that's an issue of fairness. There's a principle that is embodied in the current fee structure, which is that your voting entitlement at APNIC is proportional to the fee contribution that you make or have made to the organisation. So that's something that I think is again one of those fundamentals that would be retained unless someone has got another idea. But I'm not questioning that one at this stage. So let's just look again at what the APNIC fee structure looks like as a framework. It's quite a mathematical set of formulae, and it has a small number of basic parameters. So If you look at it this way, we have a fee structure which has a minimum fee level currently of $1,250. This is when considering IP address holding APNIC members. There's a fee increment of a factor of two between one tier and the next. There's a minimum address space holding, a slash 22, at which the minimum fee is charged, and there's an address space increment. So, as I mentioned before, with three extra bits of address space, you're charged a factor of two your annual fee is increased by a factor of two, which is something that compounds all the way up through the fee structure. So that's four parameters that you can see within the current structure, and we might try, as I will in this example, to adjust those parameters and look at a different way of doing it that will address some of the concerns and the rationale that I've described. So here's the example, and I'll show you how these numbers have been worked out. But we take the same basic fee structure framework. We set the minimum fee level at a smaller level of $360 per year. We have a tiered structure still, and the fee goes up by a factor of two with each tier increment. We start at a slash 24. That's a lower level that encompasses historical resource holders, and we go up in increments of two bits per tier instead of three. So in this case, we would have a tier A ISP under this example, which is the smallest member, holding up to a slash 24 and paying $360 a year, and it goes up from there. The minimum allocation today is slash 21. That would fit in under tier C, which is $1,440 a year, and so on and so forth. And if you look at the whole table, it looks like this. So there are many more tiers in this fee structure, which might appear to make things a little bit complicated, but I think MyAPNIC is helping everyone to track how much address space they've got these days, and it can pretty easily work out what tier you're in if you ever want to know. It's at the tip of your fingers through MyAPNIC. Now, the point of this fee structure, as I said, is that it would apply to all members of the APNIC community, that is, members of APNIC, members of NIRs. And I'll get to the NIR situation in a few minutes. We've got to look at this as an example. If it's an example that we want to study, we've got to look at certain aspects. What is the impact, for instance, on APNIC members, on regular members, on NIRs, on members of NIRs? What's the impact on the APNIC budget? Now, the impact on regular members, what this table shows is the number of members that fit into each whole number prefix category. So reading at the top line, we have only three members who have up to a slash six of IPv4 address space. Now, in the example, they would pay a rather increased fee level of $184,000 over the current fee level of $40,000, and that's an increase of 144,320. Going down the scale, for instance, a slash 18, this one here, there's 89 members. They would pay $2,880 a year instead of the current $5,000 a year, so they'd receive a benefit the other way. And that's what this table summarizes, the situation for all of the 1,100 or 60 or so APNIC members that we currently have. The impact on NIRs can be analysed also through the data that APNIC has on direct allocations. And so what we see here is on the left-hand column, the first table, the top table, illustrates the numbers of ISPs in each category in each NIR. So reading from the top, APGI has 33 members that would fit into category C, two into D, and two into E, for a total of 37 members. And those figures are given there for each of the NIRs. The bottom table shows what the annual fee revenue from each of those categories would be. This is annual fees without any discount being applied for membership of the NIR. And as you'll see, the proposal here is that there is a discount applied for in recognition of the services that the NIR provides to each of these members. So what this table seems to indicate is that there's about $1.55 million per year as NIR fees here, but that is the theoretical level at the no discount level, and there would be what I've illustrated in this example is the possibility of applying a discount. And the discount, if I haven't mentioned it, the discount that's being applied is a 50% discount. So the overall impact on the APNIC budget, the current budget that we have for 2006 assumes NIR per address fee revenue of $700,000. It's a very unpredictable amount, but that's our current prediction for 2006. The example fee structure would give $778,430 as the annual fee revenues received from the NIRs, and that's an increase of 11% over the expected amount. For conventional or regular members of APNIC, there's a 14% increase from $4.2 to $4.8 million. So that's the type of analysis that we can do, given a candidate, an example fee structure, it's the type of analysis that we can do to see both in terms of what it means for NIRs, for regular members, what it means for the overall APNIC budget. So I'm just coming to the end now, and very interested to discuss some of these questions, because there are quite a number of kind of interlocking, interdependent issues that need to be considered by all of us. I don't think any of us would have all the answers here today, but I think that's what the discussion is all about. I've spoken of the framework that we currently have for APNIC fees, and I've described how there are a set of four basic parameters at the moment into that framework. So we can set those parameters any way we like, and I've got an Excel spreadsheet that that does all the sums, and you can play with the parameters and see what would be the result of different combinations. But we'd be playing with those parameters and adjusting them to meet certain overall revenue expectations, and that's a question: is where should we actually be aiming in terms of the overall revenues that APNIC should be receiving in future? I've argued that some increase is warranted over what we would currently expect on the current fee structure, but that's an open question. The other issue is, should these parameters be fixed or variable? So far, the APNIC fee structure has been fixed every year, and APNIC is sort of driven by the revenues in that case. The RIPE NCC, as a counterexample, is driven by its budget each year. They establish an activity plan and budget, and the fees are set for that year, for the coming year, according to their activity plan and budget. And so there is a good example here of another way of doing things, where basically the parameters that they have on their fee structure are adjusted, they're variable from year to year based on the budgetary needs and expectations. The NIR discount, how big, if we followed this type of fee structure, then what sort of discount is actually feasible for and warranted for services delivered by an NIR? The 50% discount in the example is chosen, well, for two reasons. One, because it's a nice round number, and two, because it happens to meet quite well with the current expected income from the NIRs, from per address fees, which would be replaced by this structure. That's an open question, whether that's appropriate. The other related question is, should the same discount apply for all NIRs? We have NIRs with vastly different ranges of experience and which impose different amounts of overhead or cost on the RIR itself. There's a possibility to apply different levels of discount to different RIRs, perhaps based on their experience. An issue that just came up in the APNIC EC meeting when discussing this proposal this week is that, of course, the NIRs have actually already paid substantial amounts of fees to APNIC for address base already received, and in a sense, would they be double charged by now being seen to be paying for that address base again? So should some recognition of existing fees already paid be made in this structure? And also, particularly with the scale of the change that's implied by some of these, particularly on certain members, should this type of structure or type of change be introduced immediately or gradually? We could undertake a sort of averaging, a scaled approach where the impact of the fees was introduced over one or even more years. And that's all. So I hope I haven't lost everyone completely with all of those details. I could have included even more, but I'm trying to balance things a little bit.
Take your ball.
I won't turn this off because I'm sure some of you might want to return to some of the slides that are there if you have got any specific questions.
Questions or comments? Maybe it contains a lot of stuff, new stuff. So
this presentation is on the website right now, on the meeting website. I'm not sure if it's accessible yet because of the wireless, is it?
Network came up just as you started talking.
Okay, network's up, and it's this PowerPoint slide pack is available there.
Billy from NIDA. Paul, I don't think I see the about historical addresses. Have you counted?
In the context of NIRs, each NIR has got a pool of historical addresses, which, as far as APNIC is concerned, is simply a pool of allocation that was sent to the NIR and about which APNIC has not got direct information about what happened to it. So I think in the paper that I wrote prior to this, there was a reference to historical addresses, and that's what I meant. Mm. At this stage, NIRs are... the NIR tier is established based on the total pool of addresses that have been allocated to the NIR, whether historically or through the direct allocation system. And I think it's a good question as to how the historical space should be treated, whether there should be some sort of a transition of existing members or of the address space from those historical allocations which have gone through the NIR pool, whether there should be a transition into this new system or not. I guess that could be a question for the NIRs themselves. But at this stage, under the sort of default situation, I guess the NIRs would still be counted as holding a pool of address space which would still be assessed on the same basis. So you may have half of the address space that you're currently holding may be historical in that sense. Half of it may have been allocated since the direct allocation system came about. But you certainly wouldn't be paying twice for that address space, if you know what I mean.
From my perspective, I think it's difficult for, I mean, every NIRs to charge on the historical addresses. Of course, we KLE sort of, you know, finished the ERX project, mm-hmm. but still we give us some period till we fully charge. And it was really difficult to persuade, you know, to deal with every ISPs or ERXPs or holders.
That's a
long time, I think.
That's a different matter, and maybe we're applying the word historical to two different types of historical addresses here, because there's the ERX space as one type of historical address space, there's the NIR pool of addresses mm-hmm. as another type, and then the current address space, I suppose, would be the direct allocations which have been made through the NIR to the ISPs in your country. And yes, they need to be distinguished, and the issues, we need to make sure that we understand all of the issues. I completely take your point about ERX address space, that in many cases there's no agreement there under which you'd suddenly start charging fees, and APNIC is not doing that, and I wouldn't expect anyone to suddenly do it either.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Changi Park from NIDA. It's fee. Toshi said we have a fee working group. Is it operational? Is it working? Or
it is available.
It's still available. I guess this fee structure is very difficult to draw conclusion. Mm-hmm. So why don't we let our fee working group come up with an
reason why is that we need an open discussion,
yes,
including the ordinary membership.
Yes.
Yes. Right.
So let's open the mailing list to all the ethnic members, and let's have discussions.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. 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 But yes, that's we can do that. Yes. And we had someone pointed out that you know, NIL fee, if we say, then ordinary member may not be concerned about that because that is NIL or something. So we need to have a mailing list of the fee discussion or something. And in that way, I can agree with your idea.
For me, I have so little information to talk about the fee structure.
Mm-hmm.
For example, for Kernic, to calculate how much we charge for per domain name, first we calculate how much we need, how much our company need. We calculate that first, and we decide the price of domain name. But we don't have such kind of information right now, so it's very hard to discuss. So let's form the working group and let's let them do the discussion.
Okay.
Satoru Tsunomaki, BB Technologies. I have two comments. One, currently extra large TS companies. Please show me impact for regular members presentation. Yes. If this fee scheme is accepted, extra large member is very huge.
Yes.
Fee for our company, we must pay about 450% increasing fee. It's no way, I think.
450% increase?
Yes.
Currently, we paid $40,000.
Yes.
But new scheme, we must pay $180,000. Secondly, I'm afraid that top 8 company like Slash 6, Slash 7, Slash 8, countries 8 company pay the fee about $1 million fee. It is about 20 or 25% of total epic revenues. It's very dangerous. They have a very high risk for the epic fee because if one member acquired another one, two members,
mm-hmm.
epic lost $180,000. It's very
it's a good point.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Good point. Yeah. Thank you.
I'm Sylvia from Abdi. I have questions. The reason you need to change the structure fee, that means that something is not right with the current fee. I guess you're going to target the steady income, right? Or steady revenue, something like that. And if that's so, then by having all of these tiers, I don't know, starting this, and if, let's say right now I'm an NIR, and members of ours look at these tiers and think that, oh, it's better to be a direct member now than to become a member of the NIR. And if that happens, then what happens to establishing an NIR?
I don't think that's what's better or worse would depend on the final parameters that are set. But the idea of discounting, well, there are several ideas here. One is that an ISP in Indonesia, whether it is a member of APCI or not, in some sense should have a comparable situation in terms of the types of fees that they pay, the sorts of impact on the APNIC revenue and budget and so forth. The idea of providing a discount is that the NIR is obviously incurring some fees and is also relieving APNIC of some costs in servicing those members. So in the example shown here, the discount was 50%. So the income that APNIC would receive is 50% of the, in the case of the NIR, is 50% of what it would be otherwise. Now, what the NIR charges is really up to you. If you if the charges, if you mark that up to the full APNIC fee structure, then the ISP is obviously paying the same. But then the principle behind the NIR structure itself is to provide better services. So I would suggest that all things being equal, even if the ISP was paying the same amount, they would be receiving a better service from APCI than they would as a direct APNIC member. Is that not a reasonable assumption?
Yeah, that is a reasonable assumption. I was just thinking, so then this means that the 50% discounts will apply with the new structure, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I'm sorry if that wasn't clear.
It's me from JPNIC. We don't have a fixed opinion over this, you know, suggested fee structure, and I just want to understand what's been proposed. Mm-hmm. One question is regarding the fee that's being charged to NIR's historical mm-hmm. address space, that's before the direct allocations. For those address space, 50% discount would not apply. Is that correct, or would 50% be applied for that as well? Because the impact would be quite large if 50% discount won't be applied for this space.
It's a good question. I'm not. I haven't. The analysis hasn't gone as far as working out what the NIR historical space actually is. Mm-hmm. How much address space is there? Mm-hmm. The calculations here don't provide a 50% discount, but maybe that's
okay.
I mean that actually I would say fits into the category of that the question. The issue that space in some sense has been paid for already. Mm-hmm. Some fee has been paid which was in expectation of having that space in perpetuity. And so to suddenly charge the full price for that may be questionable. That I think is the question that was raised in the EC meeting this week.
Right, okay.
So there may well be a case for that historically allocated space to be subject to the discount as well. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. And one more point, this is more like a comment. I think your idea about the voting is very interesting, mm-hmm. and we feel that it has a very positive aspect in the way that, you know, NIR members can directly contribute to APNIC's decision-making. And also at the same time, maybe, I don't know, okay, we won't pressure members to give us votes or anything. We don't do that. Mm-hmm. But maybe, you know, JPNIC members feel, what are we supposed to do with these votes? And, you know, ask us questions. And as a result, it might end up, you know, giving us proxies. Mm-hmm. So NIR is having such a large number of votes. So it could also have that kind of implications. I'm not saying I'm against it, but I'm just, you know, making a comment on possible implications. That was just, you know.
If the NIRs continue to be members of APNIC, then they can carry proxies for other members. But under the bylaws at the moment, the proxies have to be, they're not automatic. They have to be given each year during a certain period of time. And so I guess that would prevent a kind of an automatic accrual of proxies that would just go on and on. But you're quite right. If you've got the support of your members, the active support, then they would come along and give you their proxies, and that's how the bylaws currently work. But yes, good point.
Thanks, Izumi. Any other questions or comments? Toshi?
Toshi from JPNIC. I have a question regarding the charging scheme. Are you going to charge to enrolled member directly, or is that still open? Or enrolled can aggregate?
You ask if we're going to charge as though this is a proposal. So just once again, it's an example, and this is exactly the sort of question that needs to come up. I think that's an open question, and it's, and if the NIR wished to aggregate, then sure, why not? In fact, in some countries, it's quite beneficial to do that because of the difficulty of doing foreign exchange transactions. So there'd certainly be a demand for that facility.
Yeah, thank you. To charge Japanese yen to JPNIC members is one of JPNIC services, mm-hmm. because our member can have risk hedge, of exchange rate between U.S. dollars and Japanese yen. Mm. So we're charging a fixed Japanese yen to our members, so that can hedge the risk for our members. Mm-hmm. That is just a comment.
I wish we could do the same thing.
Chifu?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yep.
Actually, I quite like this kind of proposal. My personal, but of course, the parameters can be adjusted. But I would like to, have some sense about, whether this new proposal will encourage different countries to set up their own NIRs, and also for those. APNIC direct members in which actually can get the IP address from their NIRs, let's say for example, SoftMPB. I want to have a sense whether they have, if we implement this kind of fee structure, will it actually encourage people to set up new NIRs and then the ISP will actually join NIR to get IP address instead of going directly through APNIC. Can anyone give me some sense?
How about something?
I just want to have a feeling because if we implement this, actually we have an assumption that. There won't be a big change of the current status. But if it indeed will have a big change, like all countries will have their own NIRs, and then all the direct APNIC members will become NIR members instead of being APNIC members, then actually the financial status of APNIC will be very much different. Mm-hmm. And then we will need to do it again. Mm-hmm. So. I don't know how to do it. Anyone can provide me some kind of your thinking. Maybe sometimes people
before the from me.
It's not an answer to your question, but NIRs won't be able to charge the same amount as APNIC because we have an operational cost as well. So from APNIC standpoint, it's of course 50%, but when it's being charged to NIRs members, they don't get 50% of the discount because the operational cost of NIRs has been added. So maybe in JPNIC's case, maybe we won't be able to operate unless we pay, we charge a little bit higher price than APNIC. So I'm not sure if all the LIRs under NIRs will automatically become our members just because of the pricing situation. But I'm interested to know SoftBank BB's opinion as well.
Okay. Now, for me, if the very big country has the new NIR, then the APNIC revenue will decrease kind of discussion, but maybe ideally, if we can, we should design, even if our LIL are going to the direct member to APNIC, or even if the member to going to the NIL, we should design the fee structure just the same in the both cases. So there's the ideal situation, but it is a very difficult to implement, I think. But
I think a change is always worrying in that you wonder what would happen from as a result of the change. But sometimes current situation can be just as worrying. And at the moment we have well over 30% of APNIC's members come from three countries, which are Hong Kong, India, and Australia. And if all of those members decided to switch to a new NIR tomorrow, then APNIC would stop receiving any annual fee revenue from any of them, which would have a similar sort of impact as the scenario you described. So the current situation has got risks as well.
I have a question. What is the definition of active member of NIR? How to count the number of active member of NIR? Because we calculate the number different from the data from APNIC. The other question is by the APNIC policy, the process fee is once for all. I think what is the once for all? That means they pay the IP address not only for up to now and for the time after we change the fee structure. So we think we should consider the historical IP address. If we persuade our big member pay more money for their IP address, and we will give their reasonable reason. And I remember when they pay the big huge IP address process fee, we have said the member fee will a little low, you know. If we elevate the member fee for each year, I think we don't count the historical member. They already have the process fee, I think.
Okay, there seem to be two questions there. One is about what constitutes an active member. For the purpose of this discussion, and I assume you're looking at this table here, what this table represents is a compilation of all the knowledge that APNIC has about direct allocations to members in each of the NIRs. So we, when an allocation is made to you or for direct allocation, we have the name of the destination, the ISP, and we know how much address space has been allocated. So this table represents only the address space that's been allocated through that system. So call them active members if you like. They're active in the sense that they have, since the direct allocation system started, they've received some address space through that system. So you may have quite a number of other members who have historical addresses or addresses that predate the direct allocation system, and these have not been taken into account in this calculation, because APNIC has never received the sort of full list of members and allocations from each of the NIRs. So I would hope that this corresponds with records that you may have of direct allocations received by your members, and I'd appreciate it if we could do some cross-checking just to make sure that these figures are actually accurate, because if there's some mistake or accounting here, then it would certainly be it could have a big impact on the figures. So the second question was about historical addresses, and I think about, sorry, the once and for all principle, and I think that's, again, one of the problems of inconsistency between the NIR structure and the membership structure, and in fact the current set of APNIC policies. And the current policies say that allocations are not once and for all. They are made on a lease or license basis to ISPs for the purpose of, for the declared purpose of using those addresses within their networks. And that is the basis on which we have annual fees, and if the annual fees aren't paid, then the license or the lease is revoked. In the NIR situation, though, that's kind of inconsistent with the fact that you have paid a once-only per-address fee, and people may interpret that as a once-and-for-all sort of situation. But none of the RIRs these days are making any allocations on a once-and-for-all basis explicitly. It's not the way IP addresses are managed globally these days. So you may have paid a fee interpreted as a once-and-for-all fee, but that's not what the policies say. And if that presents a major difficulty to you, then that's another example of the issue of what to do about these historical allocations to NIRs. I'm sorry if that's not very clear, but there are quite a few issues there. It's quite a complex situation that may be better to resolve in the email discussion.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay. Yes. David.
Yeah. It's David Chen from TDAMIP. I also have a question about if we want to verify the direct allocation members in TDAMIC or NIRs, do we need to have a period of time, like starting of the year, middle of the year, and the period of time we can verify each other? We have the same members counted this total that annual fee, right?
That should certainly be shared information. I'm quite happy to make the spreadsheet that generates this stuff public so that you can see exactly what we have recorded, because I'd hope it's the same. And if it's not, then we might be revealing a few inconsistencies in procedures and so on. But this should correspond to your view, and I'll send you the table by which it was generated, so you can check it. And that goes for all the NIRs, of course.
Any other comments? Okay.
This is Eugene from CNIC. I myself quite understand the APNIC's bar date situation personally. I got a question. Is there any do you have a timetable or something this paper is a candidate paper, right? Mm. I don't know the words. Change a candidate paper to some formal one, and then put into some mm-hmm. like a policy seek or an IRC for a discussion, and then do you have a timetable? Like
no,
that?
No fixed timetable at all. No, it. I would say discussion would have to be quite productive in the next 6 months in order to have some definite proposal for the next meeting. Obviously, the earliest possible specific proposal is the next meeting, but there's quite a lot of things to consider. It depends somewhat on the view of the EC. As I mentioned today, the EC has approved a budget which will be presented this week, this Friday, which involves a small loss for the year. And APNIC has an operating surplus as a capital reserve that allows an operating loss to be sustained for some time. But I think everyone would be a little bit sorry to see APNIC continuing with losses. There'd have to be some cutback in services. And I'm trying to illustrate in the first slides that there are many new services that have been achieved. Cutbacks are another issue. Whether any of those can or should be cut back is another issue. I think it's subject to discussion among the community, to see how palatable or how feasible this type of approach is. What would it look like to choose different parameters? What are the answers to the questions about an NIR discount or these sorts of things? And there's also a sort of EC discussion as they review on a monthly basis, as they do. They review the APNIC financial results, and everyone will be tracking that quite closely.
Thank you. Maybe this it's. Thank you very much for the active discussion. And as Paul said, this is a candidate from the Secretariat, and the parameters are really just an example. But Secretariat thinks that they have the problem with the current fee structure, and they need to fix it. That kind of the principle was well described in the rationale section of this presentation. Then you can look at it, and I am asking you for the active discussion for this. Maybe we can set out a mailing list for this.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much, Paul.
Okay. Thanks for your time. Thanks.
We have another 10 minutes only, but Toshi, maybe you can finish it up really.
Two slides.
All right, great.
This is Toshi again. As I mentioned earlier, JPNIC presented our suggested model in January 2006. This is a rather simple structure. Our suggested model is to set greater category than extra large. The membership tier will be increased by one bit, like this. Extra large, current extra large is paying for $40,000 US dollars, and our discussion staff is to propose extra large plus one and plus two, and the charge would be $80,000 US dollars and $160 US dollars. Very simple. I just write this slide a minute ago. This is the pros and cons for Paul's proposal and JPNIC model. And this is a quick analysis, so maybe including some misunderstanding or some mistakes. Our model is focusing on NIL fee only, but may be applicable to normal APNIC members. But of course, Paul's model has a very big impact to APNIC normal members, so that is maybe a big difference between our proposals. Regarding Paul's proposal, as Paul said, we have still open questions. For example, 50% is appropriate or not, or continue to be valid, or some other thing. That's it for now, but I made some estimate in accordance with our model and the Paul's model. If I calculate correctly, JPNIC is going to pay $500 to APNIC, while we are paying $200 in 2005. So we definitely need some more discussion with APNIC and the other members in APNIC. Thank you.
Yeah, just keep that slide. So maybe the ordinary members are very simple to compare the new and the the candidate fee structure. But in case of the NIL, we have the, you know, the variety of the situations and cases. So please, NIL people, please study on that model and fill this table, and then we can have more and more cases to the, you know, verify the model and to have the further discussion. Thank you very much. Does anyone have any comment or question on Toshi's poll?
Yes.
Did you take into account the 50% discount there?
JPNIC has historical allocation. JPNIC has a historical allocation that is 338 class B. So if you do not apply 50% discount, the total charge is going to be this figure. I have actually applied 50% discount for NIL members allocation, allocation to NIL members.
So in Japanese specific case, we have the almost the same amount of the historical allocation as the yes.
So if you apply 50% discount for the NIL historical allocation, that's going to be $410,000, I think.
Yes, my personal perspective, $240 could be the uppermost level of the acceptable fee increase for case of JPNIC.
Speaking as someone who's been involved with APNIC since 1996, the one thing I think I'd have to remind all of you in doing these exercises is that there is no such thing as a money machine. APNIC spends money to create services that you use. No matter how you try and work it out between yourselves, don't forget that ultimately what you've got is a resource allocation problem. Either that or you drive APNIC into insolvency. So as each of you try and figure out how to pay less, the problem is that you won't have APNIC left. So at some point you actually have to understand how you're going to allow and fund your organisation, APNIC, to provide you with the services you want. So underneath all this is actually quite a fundamental issue about who pays how much. So rather than trying to search for how you pay $160,000 or less, I would actually suggest that the issue here is more about how do you fund a body that is your body that is actually funded to do the services you need done?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. Just in case, I don't mean that we want to pay less. No, I don't, but...
Yes, I just wondering, the P system, I mean, P... should be revised, and is staying at the current P model is not an option anymore? I mean, asking to Paul, can he stay at the current under current P model? Is it? I mean, you should.
That's yet to be seen. You as an EC member of
yes.
Mm-hmm. This year, which does forecast a small loss.
Yes.
The future is yet to be seen. There is a lot of instability
yes.
and risk in terms of the NIR.
Yes.
Associated revenues,
mm-hmm.
and also some risks in terms of the possible impact of a lot of new NIRs.
Mm.
I can't predict the future. It's a matter of risk rather than definite problems of sustainability. And after all, as an EC member, you would be aware that the one-year capital reserve is provided precisely so that APNIC can weather unforeseen circumstances.
Yes.
But I also have to say that these circumstances now have been foreseen for quite a few years already. We've been talking about the fee structure
yes,
for
yes.
quite a few years already, and
at some point something needs to be done.
I see.
It's not urgent in that it doesn't have to happen this year,
right?
But it does have to happen sometime.
So we should do this. Then we already decided to make up the mailing list for this project, and then who is gonna? I think somebody, you know, lead this project. The Maimura-san? Or someone has to do that.
I have no idea.
Experience. Yeah. Otherwise, we end up with nothing. Just.
One possible scenario is the EC treasurer. Very reasonable. Okay. So let's keep on discussing toward the better solution. Maybe this is the fee structure change, and it is very difficult. And someone pay more, of course, and APNIC need the securing the our revenue for the continuous project for the internet promotion within the Asia Pacific region. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for participation. And I have the one housekeeping notice. We are now having the APNIC social event. It is fantastic in Perth Royal Yacht Club. Really, yes, that's going to be fun. So the people who receive ticket, please bring your ticket. Details are listed on the back on the ticket. If you don't have the ticket, please consult the help desk. APNIC staff will collect your ticket as you board the bus. The bus will leave from level 1 plaza deck of this building. And the last bus will leave at 10 minutes past 7 o'clock. Please do not miss it. Thank you very much for your participation here. Thank you very much.